Call the meeting of the Agriculture Policy Committee to order, and I apologize for being late today. I had not wanted that to happen, but it did. First bill up, do we have Representative Hertaus here? Oh, he is. Okay. We can present your bill, Representative Hertaus. We don't have enough yet for a quorum, so we'll have to hold off on actually introducing your bill, but welcome to the Ag Committee, and you're a part-time farmer, too. So.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair and representatives, members, I am introducing an Ag Preserve bill. A little bit of history on Ag Preserve. It was created about 30 years ago, and it basically, its main purpose was to protect farmers from the ever-encroaching developing fringe of urban areas, and to kind of secure the tax base and keep it from having the taxes on the property perpetually rise as market values were driven up by development. And one of the things that has come to my attention, when you are in Ag Preserve and you enroll, it is a minimum 8-year commitment. And to get out of Ag Preserve, when you make an application to do so, it takes 8 years to get out. So one of the things that has been occurring, when you have basically a farming operation who's trying to stay farming, and if you have a life-changing event like a death in the operation, death of the farmer, then the land is still stuck in Ag Preserve. And it's a little bit of a dilemma, because oftentimes in estate tax situations, when you may be forced to sell the land to pay the taxes, the federal government requires that you pay the taxes within 9 months. Being in Ag Preserve sometimes denies the seller the full market potential in terms of highest and best use and having a willing buyer to pay the right price for the land. And so what this simply does is provides an opportunity only in a life-changing circumstance or event that if somebody would die, you have 180 days to repeal or revoke the covenant and get out of the Ag Preserve. So it would provide this opportunity. And, you know, 30 years ago, the farmland maybe on the developing fringe was maybe $500 to $700 an acre. And today that is substantially different. And so it's quite a disadvantage to families to be able to sell their property. A developer, for example, would not want to pay market price if he's stuck with having to hold it in Ag Preserve for 8 years. So it denies somebody in this circumstance from being able to sell the property at a fair market price. Quorum yet?
No, not yet. So we can hear from your testifier. Okay.
Well, my testifier is Mr. McDermott, and what happened after I introduced the bill, I was approached by the telecommunications industry, and they asked me if I would be willing to carry an amendment to my bill. And there too, 30 years ago, there was no technology that offered, or there was the infancy, if you will, of cellular communications. And in the Ag Preserve District, because it's Ag Preserve, it preserves it to not be able to do anything with it, not to build any buildings on it or anything like that. But today in farming, we've got a lot of GPS-guided technologies, mapping of the farmland, navigation of the vehicles. Farming has become much more technologically sophisticated, and it relies on these cell towers to be able to operate that equipment. And what the amendment would do would allow for the construction of cell towers when the cellular providers want to provide a network or a system in rural areas. It's kind of designed in a coverage area, and if you will, think of it kind of like a checkerboard or a matrix. And where they need to erect a tower sometimes happens to fall on a piece of parcel of land where they could negotiate with the farmer to be able to erect a tower, but it happens to be an Ag Preserve, and that precludes them from being able to erect a tower. So it would provide an exemption as technology has changed. 30 years ago, like I mentioned, we didn't have these types of technologies, and farmers rely on it. A second component why I was willing to carry this amendment is that in another area where I've introduced a bill regarding Colton's Law, some of you are co-authors on, provides for intensive supervised release of offenders. And in rural areas, oftentimes offenders are denied being released from incarceration because of the lack of cell coverage. And so there's an opportunity to carry this provision and amendment in the bill that I'm carrying to allow the erection of these towers, and it would be twofold: one for the technology component for farming operations, and the second is a public safety issue to be able to allow supervised release and intensive supervision on offenders that could be released from incarceration. So with that, I'll let Mr. McDermott testify about the cellular component.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Actually, Representative Hurtaus did such a great job, I think I could just say...
Could we please get your name, sir, for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Michael McDermott. I'm the Executive Director of State Government Affairs for Verizon. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing me to present this testimony today. Verizon Wireless is constantly expanding and adjusting our network to bring Minnesotans the most reliable 4G LTE service in the country. We have a team of radio frequency engineers who are responsible for building out this network and relieving the network of capacity overload. These engineers in turn work with our network real estate team to find the most suitable spot on which to build a tower or site our facilities on an existing structure like a building, a water tower, or another structure. In rural areas, this can be challenging because there aren't a great deal of structures that are tall enough for us to reach as many people as possible. In those cases, we need to construct a standalone tower, such as a monopole or a lattice tower. There is a section of Minnesota statutes that relates to agriculture preserve land. Under this law, properties that were granted agricultural preserve status would be restricted from supporting any activity not related to agricultural operations, with very few exceptions. Our attorneys at Briggs & Morgan in Minneapolis have identified a potential issue.
If we could stop for just a second, we have enough now for a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting to order. And Representative Backer, would you check the minutes of the meeting of March 18th, and if you would see fit to move to approve those, please?
I would move to approve them. Thank you, Chair.
Motion's been made. All those in favor of approving the minutes for March 18th, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes have passed for March 18th. And now let's get the representative, the bill introduced. Representative Rarick, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the House File 1944 to be re-referred to Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division. And then I also move the A15-325 amendment.
Okay, let's take one at a time. We'll introduce the bill. And we've had testimony on the amendment. And again, Representative, would you care to move to introduce the amendment, the A15 amendment?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A15-325 amendment.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A15 is approved. So we have the bill in the form the author wishes. So my apologies, but to continue on with your testimony. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our attorneys at Briggs & Morgan in Minneapolis have identified a potential issue with our siting on farmland that has been granted agricultural preserve status. In a case called Madsen versus Overby, a farmer was required to remove a storage building because it was determined that the building was not in compliance with the Preservation Act. Consequently, despite the fact that a tower footprint is so small as to be irrelevant to farming operations, if Verizon were to construct a tower on a farm, with the farmer's permission, of course, we might have to remove it if it is challenged under the Preservation Act. This can be very costly to us and the farm owner and delay the expansion of our network by months, if not years, as the whole process has to start over. Verizon Wireless is offering the A15 amendment to House File 1944 that would accomplish three things. One, allow the land to continue to be designated agricultural preserve status. Two, allow the landowner to continue to operate it for agricultural activities. And three, would allow for the deployment of wireless technology to benefit the surrounding farms and communities while at the same time preserving the land for agriculture as the statute intended. It is important to note that all other laws involved in the siting of a cell tower would apply. Even with the exception to the agriculture preserve land statutes, Verizon would still be required to, find a willing landowner to place the tower on their property, follow all applicable local zoning regulations, submit to all permitting requirements, including environmental testing, and adhere to all structural requirements by law. Rural areas are often the most underserved areas for wireless coverage. This amendment would remove a potential impediment to Verizon expanding our network across Minnesota. Today, farmers are relying on wireless coverage to manage crops, check soil conditions, monitor for irrigation, and program equipment to get the best yields possible. John Deere Company actually has a program called John Deere Telematics, which is engineered just to take advantage of the wireless networks out there in order to do smart acreing, smart farming, to bring the technology to the farm, which is wholly beneficial to the farming community. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Mr. McDermott, thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody on the committee wish to have a question? Representative Lewitt, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the bill and the amendment. Not sure we've got the answer to this, but just in the last couple of days came aware of a situation where land that was classified ag went ahead and leased a piece of their property to put up a cell tower. And immediately that piece became commercial property, pulled out of the ag classification. So I would hope, I'm not sure if this covers that, but I hope we're not in a situation here where simply putting up a cell tower now is going to blow up the ag classification. And again, I think this is a great step forward. I just raise that because it just came to my attention that this cost that farmer a lot of bucks real quick, and he didn't realize that they were going to reclassify his land for property tax purposes. So, but again, this is a great step forward.
We have somebody here, I think, who can answer that question, Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair and Representative, look, in a situation like that, the ag land itself wouldn't be pulled out, but that tower or what facility would be an added piece of property that would be subject to a commercial industrial tax under the situation you're talking about and under Representative Hertas's amendment or the amendment to this bill. But it would just affect the value of that structure itself.
Thank you. Representative Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That just indicates we probably have further to – we actually have more work before us because this particular cell phone tower, we harvest hay right up to the very – I mean, we're talking a few square foot relative to the rest of the land that continues to be harvested for forage, even though we took the big blueprint. But, again, it just – I think, Representative, we've got more work to do yet to fix a lot of things out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative
Hertas.
Thank you. The next stop is property tax, and we certainly could address that. But that in that circumstance, for a landowner, that would be part of the consideration in terms of the leasing of the property. And we just came from property tax, and we learned that there's more dual classification on a single parcel than we had previously understood. So I don't see that as an impediment, but just in summary and closing, I'm looking forward to creating this opportunity for property owners to be able to deal with a life-changing event, and happy to carry the amendment because, as you know, those of us that travel out in rural in greater Minnesota, oftentimes you got cell coverage when you're near a town but not in between towns. And that certainly would be good for greater Minnesota. It's good for everybody who travels the state, good for public safety, and certainly aids in the farming technology that has been created since the Ag Preserve provision was created more than 30 years ago. So with that, I would conclude and ask Representative
just
Rarick.
Just a second. Anybody in the audience who could testify on the bill? We have somebody coming from the Department of Ag. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I think I hear, and I should stay off the bat, that the department doesn't have a position on this bill, but I just have a couple of, I wouldn't call them concerns, just clarifications. It sounded from the testimony that the willingness of the farm owner of the land would need to negotiate and willfully sell their land for a cell tower under this amendment. And I just want the assurance that there wouldn't be any eminent domain actions taken against the Ag Preserve land.
Representative Hertaus.
Well, that's thank you for the question. I guess that would be something that maybe we need to consider. In most circumstances, I can't imagine somebody wanting to sell their parcel, but instead lease the space for it. And most of those arrangements, or many of the arrangements that I'm aware of, with people that I know that have, whether it's a windmill or a tower or whatever, have a percentage rent or a leasing income derived from it. So I don't think it would change the classification.
Mr. Cruz?
Mr. Chair and members, for our perspective, you know, the Ag Preserve program, as was correctly stated by the representative, you know, the policy behind it, you've already heard. But one of our concerns is obviously, and one of the concerns of this committee, is that year over year in the past, in recent history, we've had less tillable acres every year than we had the previous year. So the Ag Preserve land is an important program, and it does provide an added layer of defense from eminent domain on agricultural land. So that aspect would be rather important. The other area that I would like to highlight is under the qualifying persons definition, they have the trustee of a trust. Now, as my understanding, I'm not a trust attorney, but from my law school days, there are a number of different structures of trust, some of them revocable, some of them irrevocable. Where they're irrevocable, and those are largely done for the sake of probate issues and tax issues, the beneficiary still holds title to the land, or at least the decision to revoke the trust. In a classic trust, the trustee could be a bank or a law firm or some disinterested third party, and they hold legal title to the land. Why I bring this up is, in that circumstance, you could have, potentially, a bank or a law firm saying, well, this will benefit you greater to sell the land, even if the beneficiary didn't actually want it to be taken out of agricultural production. So I would highlight that area as an area of concern. As I said, the department doesn't have a position on this bill. But those are the two areas where I see, you know, possible conflict with what the program was originally instituted for, which is if the farmer wants to keep this land in ag preservation, they will be allowed to do that. And I see two gray areas, one eminent domain and the other, if they're the beneficiary of a permanent trust, could they overrule their trustee in saying that the land was going to be sold into development?
Mr. Cruz, maybe you don't have the answer to this question, but in your knowledge or to your knowledge, is ag preserve land located across the state, or is it mainly closer to metro areas where land values are higher?
Mr. Chair, you're correct. It's almost always around some type of you know, city zoning area, where basically the suburbs. That was why it was created to keep the at the time they referred to as urban sprawl from taking over farmlands. And as you've heard already, the tax prices coming up because of land values and just not being able to keep it in agriculture production with the tax implications of the surrounding development.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm trying to learn about this myself. And would that also be true around places like St. Cloud, Rochester, and Mankato, then we would see the Ag Preserve land?
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know exactly where all the Ag Preserve land enrollees are. It's a voluntary program, so if they wanted to enroll their land, as you've heard, it is somewhat of an onerous process to get in or out. And so I don't know precisely all the cities, but I would suspect that any farmer who wanted to be preserved around the St. Cloud area, if they submitted it, I'm sure they already are in Ag Preserve land, or they have an agreement, or it's available to them.
Mr. Hines may have a further clarification. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, this program is called the Metro Ag Preserves, and this is only available in the 7-county metro area, the one that the base bill addresses.
Okay, thank you. So, Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And therefore, my next question is, if this is only in the metropolitan area, are there gaps in self-service in the 7-county metropolitan area?
Who would care to answer that? Mr. McDermott?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there are gaps, and there are capacity issues when people are using their iPads or their cell phones to access the internet or to stream video. Puts a tremendous strain on our network, and we need to do something called capacity relief, and that's why you would see the need for additional siting in a metropolitan area, especially on the fringe of the metro area.
Okay, thank you. Representative Johnson, follow-up.
Yeah, it's not a follow-up to that. Thank you very much. That helps. What my concern is that, and this is a concern I have in general with bills moving along from committee to committee, is sometimes we hear about issues that are unresolved in this committee that really are really ag issues, but we move the bill along, and it goes to a committee that doesn't focus on ag policy issues. And I it sounds like Representative Lewick has some issues with this, and I think Mr. Cruz raised some issues. My question is to you, Mr. Chair, how do you see this the ag issues getting resolved in this bill if we were to move along to the next committee?
Well, I'm on the property tax committee, so I'll have a chance again to look at it. In the issues raised, I think Representative Lewick's is a property tax issue, and that's where it'll be addressed there. And I understand the reason for the program in the metro areas. That's why I was wondering if it was used statewide or just in this area. So for the purpose that it was intended, I think it's serving its purpose well. And Representative Hertaus brings up a good point when you have that 8-year tie-up period. So I'm comfortable with the bill the way it is and to move on. And to me, the issues would come up in property tax and tax committee pertaining to the how this bill would actually function with trusts and those things like that. That would be in other committees. So I'm comfortable with it. Any other questions? Not the quick closing comments, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a reminder, members, it's a voluntary option afforded a property owner. It's not mandatory. And they would know best in their circumstance whether this was a right tool or a right provision to be able to exercise that privilege under this proposed law. So thank you.
Representative Burrick, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion that House File 1944, as amended, be re-referred to Property Tax and Local Government Finance.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Thank you. Next bill, I don't think Representative Metza is here yet. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Welcome.
He asked me to take my time.
House File 1905 is next on the agenda, and Representative Johnson, would you care to move that bill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1905 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance.
This one's interesting. Representative Metza, welcome to the committee, and let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. So this kind of fell into my lap accidentally. I had the idea over the last few years that it would be helpful to grow our local agriculture on the Iron Range and the surrounding areas, and essentially was thinking of creative ways of trying to, you know, attract more farmers to our region. And I had a visit from our NERC facility, and they requested that they stated that they were going to be putting in a request for bonding for the new processing plant after finding out that it needed to be upgraded. And so they put in the bonding request, and I scrambled right before deadline to get some semblance of an idea in how we could turn this into what I saw would be an opportunity to create a new USDA certified meat processing plant in the region. And there's some maps and a letter coming around right now for you to take a look at. But essentially, the basic idea of the program here, and it needs a little bit more work before we finish it up, is to create a pilot that would have a training aspect for the inmates who are currently there. They aren't violent offenders. It's more of a correctional facility with the aim to get them back out and being productive members of society. We've been doing the work up there since the 1930s in regard to the processing. And so they've already got all this stuff in place, and I figured wouldn't it be great if our local farmers could end up going to this facility and potentially be able to, if this comes to fruition, have their products get certified and packaged and be able to sell at the local grocery stores, giving our farmers an opportunity to feed their communities. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers. But if you do look at the map, the one I circled, and I apologize for not printing in color, I was trying to save the state a few dollars. So the red flags are all the flags that are not circled, and the circled flag is the green mark referred to at the bottom there.
We've got it. Thank you. Any questions from members of the committee? Would these products be for full retail sale then?
Correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Okay. Let's hear from your testifiers. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Keith Nelson. I'm a St. Louis County Commissioner representing about 28,300 and some folks in the center of St. Louis County. I'm also a small beef farmer, and I've sat on the board for Regional Corrections now for 12 years. Our facility truly is the work farm that works. And Mr. Chair and members, the goal here is to provide a resource for the individuals that we are serving within that facility to make certain that as they leave our facility, they leave with a skill set that affords them an opportunity to go out into the community and become a productive member of that community. We do, in northeastern Minnesota, we have a large contingent. I'll refer to the beef end first. We have a very large contingent of cow calfers, but the new grass-fed initiatives that are coming out there are providing a number of our small farmers with opportunities that they've never had in the past, and those opportunities are to supply local food, those chemical-free foods that locally grown, locally produced, and sold locally, providing that resource for our community. But the win-win on this, Mr. Chair and committee members, is the fact that we're also going to be providing significant training, something that our folks can take back out in the community and have real living wage jobs with. And I think that is the most important component of this, is the fact that this is but another opportunity for us to provide those skill sets, and we do have a number of programs that we support. This is not the only one, but this has been an integral part of our facility for a very long time. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to refer to KRL, our executive director, who knows a whole lot more about the ins and outs of this operation than I do.
First of all, any questions from members to Mr. Nelson? I would have one, Mr. Nelson. You talked about a lot of cow-calf operations, and I would assume this would be a facility that would process finished-out cattle. So would you have enough numbers of cattle up in the area? You mentioned grass-fed, that type of thing, to make this program work.
And Mr. Chair and committee members, our cow-calf operations, they're like all other farmers. They're looking for alternatives or value-added mm-hmm. components that they can put into their farming operations. And one of the places, for those of you who know northeastern Minnesota, we don't raise a lot of hard corn up there, and the growing season isn't quite conducive for that. But we do have an environment that's conducive for a lot of the small grains, and the grass-fed operations, typically, for those of you that have small beef operations or beef operations, that there's still that need for small grains in that weaning stage onto the following summer when you get them back out onto grass. We have the ability to produce that up in our region. Getting them back onto grass, the processing of those animals then happens typically at the tail end of the forage growing season. And that, again, that market seems to be a fast-growing market. And our local farmers, our Central St. Louis County livestock producers, we've got about 75 members, and they represent just that one group, probably represents somewhere in the neighborhood of 16,000 cows, 15,000 to 16,000 cows. There's a lot of small farms up there. They're not, you don't see them driving on the main four-lane highways. You've got to get off into the rural communities, and you'll see a lot of producers, you know, that have 30, 40, 50, 60 head. Before I became a county commissioner, I used to have about 90 head. I'm down to about 30 now. So there's a lot of us around that I think could gain a great deal of value from such an operation. I'm only speaking of the pork aspect or of the beef aspect. There's also the pork aspect and the chicken production, which right now for my local producers to have their chickens processed, for many of them it's about a 250-mile round trip, and that's reflected in the prices that go up to the consumers within the community and certainly affects their bottom line as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the question.
Are you calving yet?
I am, Mr. Chair, and I checked them this morning at 5:30 before I left Eveleth, okay? And happy to note that we had one more this morning, so we're well on our way, but the weather wasn't quite cooperating with me this morning, Mr. Chair. We had about 3 inches of snow on the ground and on what had otherwise been a pretty bare ground. It was really, really working out great, but we're back into winter up there for a few days.
Well, good luck with that. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Nelson. I'd like to thank you specifically for making that drive down here, and I just want to shed one quick light on both you and I. I've got a similar size operation. We kind of refer to ourselves as small beef operators, but I think the average size herd in the state of Minnesota is like 46. So we're actually kind of average. When you look at the whole spectrum, not small. But to shed a little more light on what Commissioner Nelson speaks of and Representative Metz's bill tries to address, in our immediate area, which is just west of Duluth, about 80 miles, we go through some real machinations to market beef locally. And the way it typically works is somebody buys a live animal from one of us that will produce that animal. We'll engage in feeding that animal out to some extent. And then, because we produce live animals, the owner of that animal has to go over and find somebody that will process it, or as we say, butcher it. Then, unless they've got a big freezer, they've got to go find a locker plant, which are almost unheard of now in our area to store that entire animal while they consume it. So this provides a facility there that would shortcut all that, so that live animal can go right to a completely certified processed plant. So that this particular part of the state could really use something like that, and again, we've got a very, you know, sort of complicated, convoluted process of getting a live animal into somebody's freezer unless you go to the grocery store. And I think Chair Anderson probably understands how that can work locally. Well, that's how we almost mark. If it doesn't come down to the feed yards that finish it, that's how we dispose of the rest of the animal in the local market through that very convoluted process. And this would be a big benefit for those areas with many of those small smaller herds, as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, that do desire to find another way to market, you know, some of this. We certainly don't want to not provide the finished feeders. We want to make sure they got their fair share of the animals too. But this lets us go right directly to the local market, which is very interested and engaged in doing that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Ms. Arula, hopefully I got that right.
Close enough.
Okay. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kay Arula, and I am the Executive Director of Arrowhead Regional Corrections. I thought I would tell you a little bit about who we are and this interesting story about our corrections facility. Arrowhead Regional Corrections is a joint powers agency formed by the five counties that make up the Arrowhead region. Those counties are Lake County, Cook County, Couchiching County, Carleton County, and St. Louis County. So we have a vast region that we serve. We were formed in 1976 as a joint powers entity, and we provide all of the correctional services within that region. So we have all of the probation services. We own and operate a 48-bed juvenile detention facility. And last but not least, we have the Northeast Regional Correction Center, NERC, which we are speaking of today. NERC has been a correctional facility slash farm since the 1930s. It is well established, but it is a rather unique model. There are not a lot of other correctional facilities that also are operating farms. So in addition to the traditional correctional programming, like mental health, chemical dependency, medical services, all of that exists. And our mission is to work with these men and reduce recidivism so they don't return to criminal justice. In addition to that, we're a working farm. The men are assigned to work crews, and the majority of those work crews will support our farm operation. So, we are located on about 3,200 acres, 10 miles north of Duluth in Saginaw, Minnesota. We hay about 400 acres. We have 40 acres that we use to produce all kinds of vegetables, corn, carrots, potatoes, tomatoes. We also raise chickens, turkeys, and pigs. Everything we produce is processed in this process facility, the vegetables and the meat, and then it is used to offset our operational expenses and fed to the men at NERC and to the juveniles at the Arrowhead Juvenile Center. We are able to process, and we are licensed, and our oversight is by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They come and provide oversight of all of our processing, and we are able to do that for consumption within our facility and the juvenile center. In addition, we are allowed to process for private customers. So last year we served about 400 customers that brought their animals to us. We processed for those customers 4,500 chickens, 350 turkeys, 34 head of beef, and 18 pigs. We charge a fee for that. They are only allowed per our current credentials to use that for self-consumption. So that retail outlet is not open to them. This pilot would really allow us to take an existing facility, a well-established facility and process, to that next level. Our men that work in the processing facility work under a licensed and certified meat cutter. But we don't claim that the men will leave with a vocational experience. They are exposed to some what we call soft job skills. So right now we're able to provide things like you need to show up on time, you need to take direction from your boss, you need to get along with your coworkers, and he does teach them then some of the butchering skills. But we would really like to bring this to a level that could be called a true vocational track. That reentry into our community and all of the men who serve their time at NERC reenter our communities. We know that if they have a path to a job, they are less likely to continue along that criminal track. So we think this is a huge opportunity for the men that we serve. You have seen that it's an opportunity for our region, that there is a need for this facility to serve our local farmers. And lastly, you've heard about the growing trend in having locally sourced healthy food. So on all three levels, I think this is an opportunity for a win-win-win situation. And I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ms. Arla. Just a question to get to that next step to be able to sell retail. Is the key getting the USDA certification and inspection?
I spoke to the woman that oversees our inspections from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and she actually is very excited about this. She believes there is a true need. She says their department is constantly getting calls asking where the farmers can bring their chickens or their livestock so they can sell them. And yes, it would be that level, and she believes that the turnaround time for us would be anywhere from 6 to 12 months to get to that level of certification.
Okay, thank you. Questions from members? Vice Chair Franzen.
Mainly just a statement, Mr. Chair. I grew up, for the most part, in Saginaw, and we had a hobby farm, and so we had some chickens and pigs, and so we used the work farm for the processing. But the pigs, like, they broke out of their kennel. Their kennel.
I've got a dog.
This is the Ag Committee now, remember.
I'm thinking of my dog. So anyway, they broke out, and so eventually, you know, get it back into the pen.
Right.
And it was the day of butchering day when Annie and Wilbur decided they were going to break out again. And so me and my mother are running around the yard trying to lure the two pigs back into their pen when it was spring thaw. So I was wearing some sorrels without any laces on it, and I went face first. The boots stayed in place. But I was very thankful the day that those nice little pigs went back to the went to the work farm. So, but good, yep. And but the freezer situation too. Yeah, we had to have a couple of deep freezes, but our freezers. But yeah. So anyway, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that stroll down memory lane,
Mr. Chair. Hey, we're still wondering why she caucuses with you.
Oh, we are just 2 days away from vacation, aren't we? Anybody in the audience who'd care to testify for or against House File 1905? If not, closing comments, Representative Metza.
Yeah, I guess I would look forward to this coming back with a little more work done as we progress, and you know, kind of the vision again is to get something off the ground. This, I wish we had had more time to put it together. I was actually hoping next year we could look at it, but the reason it got brought forward, the bonding request is in that gone around here. The governor intends on including it in the emergency request due to the way that the need to replace the facility now. The Commissioner of Corrections and their inspection team said, you guys got to get this upgraded. So that is the reason it's rushed. We hope to come back next year with a formalized plan and more input into the details of the pilot program and how it works. And so I'll look forward to working with any interested parties. And just for the record, I haven't heard no, it's a bad idea from anyone but PETA, Mr. Chair.
Representative, where would the actual funding come from to do the work to upgrade?
So essentially, it doesn't need funding at this point right now. The building has to get built. Programs got to get developed. And rather than just throwing a number and picking out of thin air, I'd like to take a little time to work to see what the actual cost would be to have those inspectors on site and or however that process works. I'm a rock farmer where we come from, so the beef farming, I'm going to have to take the lead from the Commissioner of Agriculture, work with Deed a little bit more and nail down a dollar amount that works. But again, that still wouldn't come. It would probably actually be tail spending. because the facility still has to be completed, and at that point I would see it appropriate for the pilot to start is after the completion of the building.
Okay, very good. Any last questions? Mr. Nelson, better get home and check the kennels to see if your cows are still in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, legislators, for your time.
Representative Rurick, would you like to
Johnson.
Oh, Johnson, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I renew the motion, my compliments to all of you. Very excellent presentation. It's a great idea. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1905 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same sign. The motion is passed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next bill is House File 812. Representative Bly is next up. We just like to have fun, Representative Franzen.
Yes, we do. Never a dull moment.
Representative, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move House File 812 to be referred to Committee on Taxes. And I also have an amendment.
Oh, okay. And the amendment is?
The A1.
Okay. Would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes. So this bill has been heard once already in this committee, and it was very close in design of a part of a bill by Representative Marquardt, and I was asked to meet with with Representative Marquardt and kind of work out some of the differences and include some of the ideas that he had. And essentially, I took some of the numbers and changed them, and I liked some of the language that he had, and so I incorporate some of the things that were in Representative Marquardt's bill that were not in mine, and made those changes. So that gets it into the shape that I'd like to have it in as it moves forward.
So any major changes or just
no? Not really. They're mostly minor changes in some of the numbers in it.
Okay. Questions on the amendment, the A1. If not, all in favor of the A1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. To your bill, Representative.
Yeah, so this is, and I think we're included in the omnibus bill going forward, but I think there is a need to pull the bill out, and we do need to go to taxes so we don't drag your whole bill to taxes.
Thank you.
That. And this is a bill to help have young farmers, or not necessarily young farmers, but beginning farmers get a start, and so it incentivizes owners of agricultural assets to either rent or sell to beginning farmers, and also gives some tax credit to the management of farms with beginning farmers. And as I said, the bill's already been approved by the committee in the past, so I don't want to belabor it. The explanation of the bill that's in your packet is very good. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Questions from members? Seeing none, anybody in the audience who'd care to testify on the bill? Seeing none, would you care to final comment? And
just that I think it's been shown that we need to find a way to have beginning farmers get a start and get access to both rental land and land to own, and I think this moves us in that direction, and I think it's an important bill.
Very good. Representative Bly renews his motion that House File 812, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign, and the bill is adopted as amended. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Rurick, would you care to step up here and assume the role?
The next bill on the agenda is House File 1904. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1904.
All right, Representative Anderson moves that House File 1904 be re-referred to the Committee on Ag Finance. You may begin your testimony.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As many of you know, I've long been a believer in blender pumps, those types of things, to increase our gallon usage of ethanol. And now with approval to go to E15, I think that's the next step to really ramping up the use of ethanol in Minnesota. There seem to be some regulatory burdens in the way of getting there in terms of getting enough stations selling E15 to really make a difference in the supply. And this bill is an attempt by appropriating some money to help and kind of guide stations that would like to make that transition from E10 to E15 in their retail platform of gas sales. And I've heard all across the board that when you break concrete, for example, it really gets expensive if you want to make any changes. And this bill is an attempt to kind of look at the low-hanging fruit, those stations that would not have to make a real significant investment, just some minor upgrades and maybe a different pump to get to that E15 level. So that's the basis for the bill. And you know, Minnesota already has in place legislation that really ramps up our use of ethanol. The next step by 2017, we want to get to 18% of total usage with ethanol. So we have to, I think, move more gallons, and E15 is a very good way to do that. And Mr. Chair, I have a couple of testifiers who want to talk to the bill and to go through some of the numbers, and hopefully we can get this moved along and help the process of stations that want to move up to E15. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Testifier, please identify themselves.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Rudnicki. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. And we're here to voice support for House File 1904. And I think Representative Anderson has definitely laid out some of the key issues. Our organization has reached out to about 1,700 fuel retailers in the state of Minnesota to date, and clearly what we're finding is the need for more information. The question often is, how do we deal with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency with respect to our fuel storage, piping, and dispensing systems? And what House File 1904 would do is help ensure that retailers have access to what I'll call disinterested information about the technical components that they have. In some cases, it's a simple matter of working with the retailers to ensure they can recalibrate their blender pumps to offer E15. In other cases, there may be situations where the actual dispenser might need to have different meters or valve assemblies and seals, maybe even hanging hardware. But it's relatively simple, and it's very straightforward. And in the end, what House File 1904 does is enables smaller fuel retailers to have access to the proper information, to navigate the regulatory hurdles, and then to eventually make E15 available to consumers. And I think one final point I want to leave with you is House File 1904 has many explicit benefits. One is that by getting more E15 out into the marketplace, consumers will have access to a fuel that, when you look at the upstream and the downstream environmental emissions on the greenhouse gas front, it's significantly less than regular gasoline. And that helps get the greenhouse gas issues under control. It also means when we use E15, we keep energy dollars within the state of Minnesota. And finally, what's really noticeable for consumers at the pump is E15 has ranged from 7 cents to 20 cents a gallon less than regular gasoline. So House File 1904 is a tremendous catalyst in that we believe it will be able to launch more retailers using a very simple approach to making E15 available to more consumers across the state of Minnesota.
Do we have any questions from the Representative Franzen?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I feel like I have to talk a lot today to redeem myself.
Payback time, maybe, huh?
No, but regarding the savings at the pump, we've got one. I used to have an E85 vehicle, and so in the summertime, when you can save an extra dollar at the pump, that really adds up. But we only have one pump in Alexandria. But yeah, you definitely can save money. That was just a comment, not a question.
Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, just a technical question. There's certain vehicles that probably can't run on the 15 yet. What is the cutoff where the models up to or down below that can use that without any concern? I know 10% pretty much covers everybody, but is there a model year where you can safely use the 15?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nornis, yeah, the cutoff year is 2001, and it's estimated that the cars on the road today, about 85% of those would meet that standard of 2001 or newer. And, of course, as every year goes by, that percentage will increase. But right now it's 2001 or newer.
And Mr. Chair, and that's without being a flex fuel. That's just...
Correct.
Yeah. Okay,
yep.
Thanks.
Any car.
One more thing, Mr. Chair. We lost our provider in Fergus Falls. I hope to have another one, but that particular station decided to not just drop E85, but they closed completely. So we hope that we can, you know, replace that.
Any other questions from the committee? Do we have any other testifiers? All right, Representative Anderson, do you have any closing comments?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would just repeat again that we're trying to increase the gallon usage of ethanol. And on the national level, we are approaching or have hit what's called that blend wall, where E10 is at about its maximum consumption rate unless we can improve or kick up to E15 or increase the use of E85. So this would help us to increase gallon usage here in Minnesota, and also as this goes nationally, and Minnesota is a leader in the number of blender pumps, E15, that type of thing, but it's rolling out a little bit slower than we had hoped it would. But this would, again, just be an incentive to encourage stations to at least contemplate making the switch over, and if it's not too expensive, we're trying to get the ones here that it's not that $500,000 dig up all the cement and new pumps, new tanks, but try to work with those that can make the conversion in a somewhat economical manner. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 1904 be referred to the Ag Finance Committee.
All right. Chair Anderson renews his motion that House File 1904 be referred to the Committee on Ag Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Members, this is the last ag policy meeting, with the possible exception of an informational hearing or two after deadlines. So with that, we are adjourned.